Blog Talk Radio.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
By the flame that burneth bright, O horned one, we call thy name into the night. O ancient one, thee we invoke by the moon-led sea, by standing stone and the twisted tree. Thee we invoke, we gather thine own, by the nameless shore, forgotten and lone. Come where the round of this dance is trod, horn and hoof of the goat-foot god. That is an excerpt from a book that one time, it's about 185 pages, and it's a book of witchcraft written, I believe, in the 70s, early 60s. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong on that. And it's by Lady Shiva. And one time it went for sometimes a few hundred dollars. It now sells for about $9.95 in the U.S. And my point being is that now there's a lot more information out there in the world. People can go online and seek out knowledge about magic, the occult, metaphysics, witchcraft. And it brings up an interesting question. With all of the information floating about, is it still necessary to think that one has to join a group or a coven? There are people in the old days and in now that think that you are not actually even a real witch until a group approves of you. And of course, there are plenty of people that disagree with that as well. So tonight we'll be discussing, if you are interested in learning the arts of witchcraft, is it necessary for you to join a coven? We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Spiritual Insight, and your host will be here in just a moment after this song, right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network, Mr. Darren Bouquet and Spiritual Insight, Coven or Solitary, when we return. Insight with your host, Darren Bouquet. And today our discussion is about coven versus solitary. And I was reading a little bit of an excerpt, from a book written in 1971 that I've had for a pretty long time called The Book of Shadows. And we were discussing, well, now that information is much more easily available, is it necessary to join a group, tradition, and or coven? And I just opened the page of this book, Samhek et Famhiolas Harahia. High priestess assumes the god position. High priest invokes and draws down the moon. High priest kneeling invokes. And I'll stop it there. And our point is about information and practice and availability and power structure. So without further ado, I'll bring on our host, Mr. Darren Bouquer. Welcome, Darren.
Greetings, everyone, and I hope everyone's had a wonderful Sunday. This is Darren Bouquer, and we're going to talk about joining a tradition or having your own personal solitary tradition, and what is there a magnanimous idea about pros and cons, or how do we feel, and is it a good idea, a bad idea? Does it work for everyone's individual to taste, or, you know, that whole situation? Daniel Michael, is this a topic near and dear to your heart?
I think it's fascinating, and I think it's fascinating to both longtime practitioners that are interested in witchcraft as well as beginners. Because beginners are like, okay, what do I do? Oh, wait. And people tell them, wait, you're not a real witch unless you do this and you do that. And so there's a confusion and there's always that curiosity. And then even for the long-time practitioners that maybe have been in a group before and aren't anymore, they're like, well, I'm kind of cool being by myself. And then, again, later on, they're like, you know what, I want to join a group again. So I think it's a topic that holds interest to those that are interested in the practice.
Mm-hmm. True, and it a lot of the time people are very just, you know, it's black or white, and there's not a lot of gray area. And I found that I think that might be the case. I think that if you're at heart pretty much a solitary, you're going to lean towards that, consistently in a lot of situations. Even if you're in a coven situation, or it's a group setting or a group ritual, after that you're going to try to gravitate towards the ideology of being a solitary again after the group ritual and not suddenly go, hey guys, let's all exchange numbers and then let me link into whatever you're doing and drop whatever I'm doing or modulate it and change it into whatever you're doing. So that's what I find a lot of the time. However... Now, this is a question maybe I had for you as well. Do you find people changing their tune with that later in life and like midstream? Say as a 4-year-old person?
I think it depends on just where they are in life. Like, for example, when I first started, I think I was interested in finding a group. Not having that much success with it, not finding the people that I felt were... let's just say we're pointing me in the right direction without going into details. I decided, well, I was going to continue. I had already started, but I was just going to continue to study on my own in all matter of metaphysical things, whatever they are. So I just decided, because I had personal experiences, I was already considering myself somewhat in it by default, if you know what I mean, seeing things and having astral projections and seeing shadows and spirits. I was just curious, almost on a practical level, if you know what I mean.
Okay, I need to go on a quick break, and we can come back in 10 minutes, if that's possible.
Okay.
Okay, or you can continue, and then I'll be back with you in just 10 minutes.
Okay, I'll turn your mic off and come back.
Okay.
So, one of the points I wanted to make, and hello, I see everybody in the chat room. I see Gigi, I see Kevin, I see Veronica Holmes, and welcome everyone and various guests. And Darren's taking a short break. He'll be back in about 10 minutes. But one point is interesting, and one aspect of this that I think is interesting, is the book I was quoting. This is a book that was written in 1971, and it's has before sold for like $150, $200 back in the old days when people used to look around for different metaphysical books and such. And the information, yes, you could find it, but it wasn't as easy to find and sometimes would cost more. If you just bought it from somebody or maybe a friend gave it to you, at one time I had the Witch's Bible, I gave it away to somebody because I found it to be valuable and I thought they would like it. You know, so, And then I changed my path midlife and became more, a little more atheistic, a little more humanistic. And then I returned to a path of belief. So the interesting thing is the information argument then, I guess, about the groups and or being solitary. I think you can also do both. I think you can be in a group and totally do your own independent thing. I think some people are scared of the power structure side. It's an interesting argument, and there's even abuse that has happened in the past. And but that goes for all religions. That doesn't go for just anything inherently pagan. And I see there's another call here. I'm going to go ahead and take them. Welcome, Kevin Baird.
Hello, how are you?
Doing well.
Happy Maybach.
Absolutely. And any comments on solitary versus coven?
Well, I got to a point to where I discovered that I don't really have any peers, you know, as far as my practice goes or how I look at the spiritual world, that kind of thing. So I, you know, migrated away from the groups.
Now, if you don't mind me, because I think you've said it on the air before on Main Street Universe, saying you have been part of covens before, am I correct?
Yes.
Including you were a Gardnerian at one time.
Yes.
And of a group that I'm a little bit, I think I know where they are. And did you find that experience to be a satisfying one?
It was,
at the time,
yes.
I mean.
Yes.
What was your, was it time to move on then, or did you just feel like it had served its purpose? I'm just curious.
It was, you know, it's, I looked at it as people who lived to be line cooks and not ever change the menu.
Okay. So you maybe felt it was a little more traditionally based, regardless of how old or new the tradition is. It was just, okay, well, I want to explore beyond whatever tradition is, I guess.
Yeah, because we have to remember that when the tradition was born, it was going through an evolution, and somewhere that evolution process stopped.
Right, because Gardner was an explorer and an anthropologist and all those kind of things.
Yes.
And he very much was into, he was kind of eclectic, really, but he formed a tradition, and then I think the second generations made it seem more, quote, traditional, if I'm making sense.
Yeah.
Maybe took a little of the, but I'm not speaking from personal experience, I'm just speaking from observation. And I'm also making it wholly and fully clear that I don't mean to offend any Gardnerians out there. I think it's a great and interesting, fascinating history with a eccentric, interesting founder, and I think it's a great thing, and I think he did a lot to bring sort of what people, I guess, call now neo-paganism back. Or I guess if it's neo, then it's now, and it's modern, so that's not back, but I think you understand what I mean, that he did a lot to bring these practices to the public, because he did, like, you know, TV interviews and radio interviews, and people are like, oh, what's this? And then other groups showed up, and it brought attention to all the other metaphysical groups that were out there, and then all the great metaphysical thinkers of the early 20th century, too, even a little before Gardner's, 1950s run there. You had Crowley, and you had Blavatsky, and all these great mystics of the time, of the early 20th century. And Gardner was a great and interesting part of that history a little later on. So I certainly don't mean any offense towards them, but just talking from personal experience, you were saying you felt it was time to move on away from the coven structure and then explore your own thing.
Yeah. Yep. So I started vagabonding from coven to coven, I guess.
You were hitchhiking.
Yeah.
And so, in your experience as a coven member, and I think I know the answer to this because you're a pretty laid-back guy, but did you feel any of the other pressures? Some people have criticisms, and some people say they feel power structure pressures of small groups, and then people saying, oh, high priest, high priestess. Did you feel any of those pressures, or was yours just pretty much just you just felt like it was time to move on?
I think both. Because there was the hierarchies that were in there, and that, you know, muscle was influenced and, you know, exercised.
Right.
And I felt at times unnecessarily.
Okay, so you felt that there was the potential for some ego to get a little overboard in that.
Yeah. Yep.
Structure. Now, I would also like to say, because one thing that does happen, and a friend of ours on Facebook shared a video about this today, or yesterday or whenever it was, and that was Marcy. Hello, Marcy, if you're listening. Is that a lot of time, the perspective of the coven member is not represented well during this debate. So as you being someone in there, talk about maybe some of the positive things about being in a coven, like camaraderie or whatever else. You know, it was, I imagine it's a certain closeness, especially if it's like skyclad and everything else. Then in that case, it's like you're really close to these people. You know, you're out in the woods, you know, doing this. Maybe you could comment on some of the positives of your coven experience.
Well, the thing about the skyclad experience kind of stuff, that it ended up being too sexual for me, where it was
mm-hmm.
just, you know, people wanting to not have any kind of walls, if you will, you know, walls or things that, you know, were statuses. And it got to where the genitalia ended up being statuses. So no matter, you know, whether you got clothes on and you're wearing Oscar de la Renta or Louis Vuitton, right, or Louis or Levi's, that you run into, you know, where
mm-hmm.
some people are taller, right, and some people are shorter. Some people
right.
are wider, some people are thinner, and people feel like that puts them into a class of some sort, and that got to be, you know, problematic. I think that if we had tens of years to where we had that kind of exposure, that I think those boundaries would be dropped, but because part of the life, or like 98% of the life was spent, you know, wearing clothing and using it as a status, it really just made the skyclad circles and covens problematic because of that. But it's always complicated in that we're at a genesis, a second genesis for, you know, the Wiccan way or the pagan way or whatever, and that it needs time to evolve. So it's going to ebb and flow, just like, you know, the psychic cultures and the mediumship cultures. Like, it's in an ebb right now to where it's pulled back, and only the people who really care about it and not looking for it to be an image are still in it.
Right.
And everybody else has gone on to try to look like a Kardashian now.
And I understand what you mean, which was part of the lesson, right, though, of the skyclad thing, is to let go of those images. It's just what you're saying is that maybe people didn't do as good as a job as you had hoped of doing so.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because I have known plenty of people, and I've done it before myself, limited a couple times. And yeah, it was kind of like you said, the group started to turn into a little bit of a sex party, to be honest.
Right. Yeah.
This is when I was kind of new to the whole thing. And I was like, well, I don't feel like I'm learning that much. I mean, we're kind of having fun, but I don't want to get into that. But they were very nice and very respectable people. This wasn't in any way something that was unpleasant. It was just not it didn't feel like this was the direction I wanted to go. So, but I've also known other people that say it can be a real bonding experience of the maturity of just, you know, getting... For those that don't know, listening, skyclad, that's what it means. It means clad only by the sky. And it's also important to know that not every witch tradition does this, or pagan tradition, certainly not. In fact, I would probably say most of them don't. But, of course, that's where the attention would go for press or whatever, and perfectly understandably so. There are other groups, you know, the Druids and the Asatru. The Asatru and the Druids and other groups, other traditions, family traditions, meet-up groups, you know, just small gatherings, all sorts of different ways. It's not as official as people might always think. I remember our first episode of Main Street Universe that Kevin and I had done, we talked about how pagans exist in little pods. They exist in little groups that sometimes, you know, communicate, you know, online or whatever, and then unite in some way. But there are many shades of it. So for those listening that are interested in the craft, you can kind of get whatever you want. You can find it. If you want to do the, you know, jumping around, you know, sky clad in the woods, there's plenty of that. If you want to do indoor ceremonial magic, you know, there's that. There's the Druids, and we had a really good Asatru priestess on this show a while back. That's the Norse pantheon, and they believe in being garbed as well. So there's many different ways to do it, and different reasons. Some are based more on nature, some are based more on offering, some are based more on gnosis. Some of the ceremonial magic groups are really, it's about the deep inner gnosis of the practitioner. They all are that to some extent, of course, but I'm just sort of covering a lot in a brief time, if you know what I mean. And I think that, again, a lot of it has to do with gnosis, including the skyclad thing, is you're putting yourself into a different place than the prosaic, mundane rat race, and you're going out somewhere else. And that can be part of it, just like wearing the garbs can be part of it. Can be that thing that helps you trigger. Oh, I'm wearing my favorite necklace, I'm wearing my favorite robe, I'm wearing my favorite whatever. Or some traditions even are adornment traditions that will add something. You add a stone, you add a gem, you add a patch to your robe, you add a necklace, you add a whatever the case is. There's many different ways. And I think all of it comes down somewhat to the same thing. They're trying to put you in the state of mind that now you're in the magical place, just like if you have a magical name. Which I've had in the past. I don't use that anymore, but I have in the past. At the pagan name or the magical name. So, again, because I think it's sometimes underrepresented in this debate, and since you're someone that has been in a coven, perhaps maybe I can ask you, what about raising power with other individuals rather than just trying to do it yourself? Now we're talking very specifically, not so much about a ritual that's meant to honor something, which you can still do that during the ritual, but what I mean is we're talking about magic now, casting a spell, raising the energy. Do you think you can make things happen more powerfully by raising it with others, or do you find it easier to do it yourself?
If you're starting out as a group is the way to do it. And then once you go solitary, then solitary, I feel, is the best way.
Do you sometimes think that could be because once you're used to doing it, an issue of concentration could perhaps be the obstacle? Like some people, and we're talking about whether clothed or not, they just sometimes don't feel like they melt well with others, if you know what I mean. And then that other person, they're like, well, I don't know if that person, are they concentrating? Are they, you know, sometimes some people crack a joke, or some people don't take things as seriously, and you're waiting for them to say something snarky. And again, this all is very subjective, individual experience type of stuff we're talking about. So maybe that's part of it, is that once you're used to doing it, and once you know how to raise the energy, that maybe after, like you had said, and in your experience, had worked in a group, in a coven, perhaps then it's just easier for you to focus by yourself at home because you're not waiting for, you know, Bob over there to laugh or say something silly or whatever, or make a movement or a gesture, you know, because you get to know these folks. And maybe sometimes it's easier to focus on your own.
Now, I would say really all the above.
Mm-hmm. What about the aspect of a positive aspect of Coven, I would imagine, is you're having a personal teacher versus, say, learning from a book. Any comments on that? A mentor, you know.
I think, you know, having a mentor at first, you know, works out really well, and then you find that the mentor becomes a colleague, and then eventually the mentor becomes a student, just like, you know, when the master is a student. I think Sting had a song about that, right? So you evolve. You come into a circle or a grove,
right?
And you grow, and then sometimes you outgrow the grove. So having, you know, master, student, then colleague, and then, you know, colleague, student, or whatever. So there's it goes through evolution, unless you just like process.
Right. Well, and some what it could be is not always so much about like, but maybe some people need it longer than others, if you know what I mean.
Exactly.
Now, we do have a caller. I'm not sure if they're for a comment or if they wanted a reading from Darren. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll go ahead and click on 619. You're on the air. Welcome. Oh, they might just be listening.
Yeah, if there's a question mark beside their name, that usually is the flag that they are wanting to ask a question.
Yeah, but they did not answer, unless there's just a signal issue. I did turn their mic on. 619? Nope, not answering. Okay, they might have stepped away from the phone. But anyway, and Darren has tried to call back, and his signal keeps dropping. So, but we have our conversation still going on. And it was good that you called, because you're someone that actually has a pretty good amount of experience being in covens. And I did encourage people that have been in covens to call. A lot of time, this argument is made by solitaries, or by argument, I mean this discussion. So I think it's also important to bring out some of the good sides of being in a coven, too. A lot of solitaries are like, well, I want to do this and that. I want to be independent. Da, 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 da. They're all good arguments, and they all make sense. But I think it's also important to maybe point out some of the camaraderie and some of the interesting thing about having a small community can be. And there's as well different ways. The word, you know, coven, been around a while. There are also the other things we mentioned, like traditions, and some of them are just meetup groups. I guess you can call them mini covens. There are different Wiccan traditions. Now, some people argue whether they're truly Wicca or not. That's not my point and not my argument to make today. Certainly not. I don't even think that way. I think if they identify that way and they have similarities, then they're just fine, including the Lothlorien tradition, which Jesse was a member of, our Friday host, Paul Bureau, the great herbalist. I certainly think he qualifies to call himself that if he wishes. He's a master herbalist and grows things, and his natural magic that he has written about, some good books about there, about the plants. There's the Druid traditions, the ADF, the Reformed Druids of North America and others, as well as the Order of Bards, Ovates, and Druids, the famous British tradition. There's the Stregarias, the Italian witches, the Streghe. And so there's a lot of different paths, traditions, covens, meetup groups, and I think one aspect that is positive, again, would also be to have a support system while you're learning. Because at times you're engaging in things that people have told you were, you know, if you were raised Baptist or something, were scary. So it's good to have, I think, sometimes a support system or in-person teacher, or at least somebody you can contact and call to help you over those things. It might be different having the personal touch versus learning from a book and online. And I see Darren is back.
Being in a group, you have new people coming into it who will ask questions that you never considered.
So they can help the teacher as well.
Yeah.
Be sharp. Darren, you are back. Welcome.
Oh, hi. Yeah, hi, everyone. Yeah, I appreciate it. I had a slight roller skating injury. So I'm at the hospital right now. So I hope.
Oh, you're at
okay.
the hospital?
Yeah, right now at the moment. But hopefully it's not any big deal. But at any rate, I wanted to, you know, this is such a great topic that I wanted to really flesh it out. So I'm not the one. I'm dropping somebody off. So.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah, so I can still.
But we've discussed a couple of different things, Darren, including one about access of information. Now, Kevin called, and it's good that Kevin called because Kevin has been in multiple covens before, and he's experienced both the group and solitary.
Uh-huh.
The book I opened up with, you can buy now for about $9.95 in the U.S., about $16 in Canada. It sold in the past, in the 70s, when it was written, for like $200 before.
Mm-hmm.
Because back then, knowledge about witchcraft and metaphysics wasn't as... It was there. You could find it, but it wasn't as available as, like, in the, you know, the internet time we live in now.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about that, availability of information and being careful with it, of course.
It's being careful with it. I think what we're seeing is that there's a lot of innocuous... magicians and witches and pagans and polytheists that read a lot of information and digest it, but don't know what the hell to do with it. And if they do something, it's they're not really putting out the real powerful energy that the ritual, ceremony, or exercise really calls for. They're more of just going through the motions and not really entering into it, because no one's there to say, hey, this is what you do, or you do these breathing techniques, or you really visualize this. They're just kind of moderately working through the motions. And that's where a coven would be really great, because somebody is there to give you, and I don't know if you've covered this already, but give you that real hands-on, that real organic, humanistic aspect to it.
In fact, we're just at that point. The advantages of a personal teacher. So you actually called it back with that just on time.
But you mean like psychically I just keyed in exactly what you were talking about?
That's right.
Sweet. All right. Awesome. Well, this is, but you know what's funny is we want to be like, we want to really thrust ourselves into magic, but until we know how to really, I mean, the key is just learning how to enter into the slipstream of that energy and that power or whatever it is. Name what you want and interact with it in a way where you're being humble, but you're also petitioning for something that you need and just affecting it. And once you figure that out, the rest of it is very, it's all an add-on to that. That's what I found on a lot of levels.
And I would like to add, ask, because our caller, Kevin, and our co-founder, actually, of Main Street Universe.
Mm-hmm.
He had discussed some of his experience in covens, both positive and negative, or I would say more positive and neutral, and why he left and became solitary. And in your case, have you been, if you don't mind sharing, you don't have to say specifically, but I mean, have you been more of a solitary in your path, or have you been in groups, and have you had personal teachers?
Yeah, no, I'm mostly solitary, but I have interacted with, I've had like a coven partner on and off over the years. And, you know, there's been, but the thing is too, we would get annoyed with each other and then we'd be solitary for not talk to each other for many years at a time. So that's the thing is, I think what you're looking at is people that wanted to be solitary and, you know, like it just, no, you know, not wanting to listen to another person. And the thing is, too, what I realized is if I put it under the microscope, I was doing a lot of my own magical practice even when we were coven involved, you know, as two people. So it's interesting in that respect. Also, I think when I look at it, like, I think you can gain a lot from other people, but sometimes you need to really do the work yourself. If you're not doing it yourself, then you're just almost in a social club and you're not gaining the kind of knowledge and wisdom you need sometimes. Even if you're in a coven all the time and all the magical practice and exploration you do is every week with a group of people, you may be really missing something in the long run because you're never really exploring the depths of soul and of person and of identity and ability that you would if you were to really do it yourself.
And I think Kevin touched on that earlier when he mentioned something about it was to the effect of you're kind of letting them do it. Like you need the process so much, and it's good. There's nothing wrong with needing that, and there's nothing wrong with camaraderie.
Mm-hmm.
I think camaraderie is good. I'm a very communal people person. But I think Kevin was right about that, and you were right about that, that it can perhaps take you to the point where, okay, I'm doing what High Priest and Priestess tell me, and I'm not doing a whole lot else extra. I'm going through the process.
And I like to, to venerate somebody. That's why I've never taken that role. I've been asked to head up a couple different churches, one in Northeast Ohio, here, you know, but a couple of people brought up to me in Nova, you know, just in different incarnations. Sometimes they were bigger, aspects to it. Sometimes they were smaller. But at any rate, I've never really liked to take that role on because I don't want to be venerated by anyone, you know, maybe as a mentor when I'm forming that relationship with somebody, but I don't want acolytes. I just don't. I want people to learn and grow on their own spiritual path and be the best they can be for them. And if they learn something that I don't know and they can share it with me, that's great.
And that's another.
Maybe that just sounds intrinsically New Agey and, you know, huggy or whatever, but that's pretty much where I'm at. I don't want a bunch of, you know, people mumming the same thing that I say all the time. It's just really, I don't know.
Well, Kevin mentioned a similar thing, too, where he was talking about, well, one of the values of it is you can learn from your student.
It's beautiful.
Maybe the student, if they go out and explore, can teach you something.
I learn all the time. I learn by teaching people the same stuff that I already know, which is great. But the thing is, you know it, but maybe revisiting it again after 20 years, you're discovering all sorts of new aspects of it, which is fantastic. So I guess, Kevin, if I could ask you, what's your take on have you gained from a coven aspect at all, or have you gained from that, or do you think that the solitary is definitely the way to go for a serious practitioner, or what do you think?
I think that covens are good on holidays, but not every week. Just that's what I've gotten to. So,
like fun for the eight wheel of the year kind of stuff, and have a festival, have a party, all that kind of thing, I guess, maybe is what you're saying. Camaraderie.
That's really working well for me because back when before I was, you know, working as a psych professional, that I almost did something Wicca every day. And the coven wasn't always available. Everybody was always busy and everything. So I think I'm answering your question, Darren.
Yeah, well, I totally agree. I found a lot of that, you know, right after Katrina, I went back to Northeast Ohio a little bit to kind of be with my family and just be in that area. So I got involved with a really vibrant group of you know, polytheists out there, and they just needed that social network. I mean, it's constant feeding into each other, and maybe because, you know, there's not as many or what, I'm not sure, but the thing is, if you're a serious practitioner, we're not talking about the social aspects of somebody's tuna noodle casserole all the time. And we're talking about magical practice. You know, like, I love tuna noodle casserole, by the way, as long as you put the green peas in it. But I just don't want to talk about that the whole time, because
Right. Then
I feel like that we're not talking about, we're not really doing anything.
And tuna casserole was one of my, as a kid, believe it or not, that my mom used to make me on my birthday.
Tuna noodle casserole?
It was some kind of tuna casserole.
Yeah, some kind of tuna casserole. I don't know. I mean, I wonder this. I wonder why I know certain things about different types of manifestation and divination and things that people that have been doing X and X for so long have never even really dug into. And it's because, really? Because they're so used to these giant social aspects of it. That if you're spending time talking about, well, Maban and this and that and that, like, no, I get it. But at the same time, what have you really explored about yourself and your own abilities and what your connectivity to what part, what element, and what, have you done any of that? And it's like, well, not really. And it's like, well, why the hell not? Like, what are you doing this for? I don't know, you know? So, and this is not a slam or anything on anyone who decides that, oh, I'm happy with where I'm at, or I'm happy with what I know. But I'm just saying there's so much to gain from self-exploration, and you can only do so much of that when we're worried about who attended what, at what point, and how many flyers did we send out to this and that and to this one. And, you know, it's like...
And the one guy in the circle has, like, really sweaty hands when we hold him. I threw that out there.
Right. And that, I love people. And you guys both know me pretty well, and you know I love people. I do. I deal with people all the time, but... When you're constantly dealing with people as peers and colleagues and peers and colleagues, and everyone has their own idiosyncrasies and psychosis and all this stuff, and then it's like we're threading magic through it, and everyone has their own way of dealing with certain divinity forms and all this stuff. Suddenly, if you add all that up, wow, when do you have time to figure out what the hell you're supposed to do?
And I'd like to comment on that, because I've sometimes joined groups where... been very friendly and all that kind of stuff you're saying, but almost like felt like when I was working with the person, like they were on fire or something and magnetically rejecting my energy. They weren't bad. It wasn't enemy or anything. It was just didn't feel right. I'm like, this guy's not on the same page with me. But I've never had that issue when it's just been about something ceremonial based on things like offerings or just doing a nice ritual.
I enjoy ritual.
But when it's actually a work of magic, it's got to be the right people, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Alone.
Instead of hearing this chick talk about, like, when I channel, I feel the force, the magnetic, the phoenix force of this, and then I become rebirth, but then I become ash, but then I become the ashes that grow in the soil. And you're listening to this for 45 minutes, and you're like,
you know, I don't know what's going on. I'm trying to focus on what I want to do or what I'm trying to maintain.
But that's good. And I think that's good that she's there to share this stuff. But it's like, what if you really don't care for that person as much as you care for everybody else, and you want to maybe get into something else, but you don't want to be rude to anybody else? Then actually the time you had to spend in sacred space and sacred time is just gone.
Yes.
So
another important aspect, too, of magic is, I think people have to also, because we've shifted from talking about just ceremonial offerings. Like, I'm a druid, so there's a lot of offerings. Mm-hmm. A lot of, you know, we offer you this, we offer you that. Sometimes the rituals aren't for a magical working. But if they are for a magical working, I also think people have to take responsibility, if that makes sense, for that work. I think people sometimes...
Yes, they do. They have to be responsible for the energies they have or what they're bringing into it and all that stuff.
And if that group isn't right, then I think to myself, if it's not just my visualization, my intent, I'm like, what if someone else in the group, and this was my point, about working alone versus coven. Again, we've mentioned the good and bad of both this evening. Just what if
gentlemen, if you don't mind, I do have to go because I have to help do this stuff at the hospital right
okay.
now. But I did want to jump back in and get into as much as I could do. Please, you know, round up the evening for me. I thank you both, and then we'll see you again on Spiritual Insight. Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you, Darren. And Darren had an emergency tonight, but he managed to call in. And Kevin, you're still here with us, and you've been in multiple covens. So we talked about responsibility of magic is what we started to talk about. And what if someone else in the group isn't on the same page as you? Now, that's an interesting concern for a ritual that's actually based on a magical practice, based for a raising of energy and a magical. And I'm curious if you've ever had a bad experience with something like that.
Well, yes, and I had it explained to me that you, if you want to be able to count to 10, you have to have odd numbers along with the even numbers. So
okay.
to get to 10, there has to be the odd bits in there to get you up into the higher number. So I learned to cope, basically, in a word.
And again, we have said in the past, a lot of times when people talk about the coven versus solitary, it's the position is represented by solitaries. So we definitely wanted to make sure that represented was the positive of coven experience. Personal instructor, personal teachers, that you still have freedom even though you're in a group. Camaraderie, support, and other things as well. And my roommates don't realize I'm on the air, but that's okay. They're calling to me. But the point being is that there is a very positive experience in the coven experience, in the group experience, in the tradition experience. So I think we have to be careful not to just always say, oh, we're just more free because we're solitary, because reading a book might not be the same thing as chopping up herbs with, you know, the wise woman in the garden while she's walking around telling you what they're for. To me, that can be a much more valuable experience, and one that I had early on with my first teacher, though I literally don't know her history or anything like that. She was an old lady that I used to visit. She knew plants. We would drink Earl Grey tea on her porch, and she would talk about meditation and metaphysics. She called herself a witch. This was in the 80s. I don't know how legit it was. I don't know if she was reading a book and then telling me later. But she did know the plants. And so there's something about that, you know, about when somebody just goes, oh, that's, you know, lemon, this is, you know, vervain, whatever.
I find it interesting that you are revisiting that with Susan Weed.
Exactly, who Susan Weed is, the master herbalist that is on the Main Street Universe Network here with us now on Tuesday nights at 10 p.m. And it's really a blessing to have her on, and I get to pick her brain on Tuesday nights. It's great. And we've been talking about infused honeys, actually. And, of course, there are advantages to solitary. Like, you're not thinking about hierarchy. You're not thinking about these things. You're just learning on your own. But I do think the personal touch has to be a powerful factor in the coven argument, even though I myself have never been in a, quote, coven. I've had an occasional teacher. I've had occasional meetup groups and been part of tradition, like the Druid tradition I'm part of now, but not necessarily in the form of a, you know, a small coven. But you yourself, Kevin, had been gardenarian, had done the old, you know, sky-clad gardenarian, all of that sort of thing. And to me, that had to have been a life-changing experience from some technical, you know, Northern Virginia military guy. I'm curious how that was for you when you first experienced that. What was going through your head?
Maintaining composure, really, the first experience, really, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're there with, like, 13-some-odd people, and it's not exactly a shower at the gym, if you see what I'm saying, kind of thing. And then,
right.
you know, as we got on into the summer and fall, it was a lot more comfortable being able to cope with that. And that goes back to what I was saying, that if you could have some 10 years of doing, you know, the sky-clad traditions, it would be very enlightening. It would continue to be very enlightening. The thing is just the core, the confidence, and the constitution of everybody is such a dynamic that it's never constant, and that expectations change. The last one that I attended, you know, and then after everybody, you know, garbed back up again, I did a walk around and took pictures of the perimeter. We were, like, way out in the middle of, like, Garrison, Virginia, you know, up and hidden in, away in the Akoya landing areas. And I did a walk around. I did a perimeter photo thing, like a panoramic thing, and I was able, I captured a fey person or being. I think I've told you about that. There was a tree being or a tree life or something that was about 3-4 foot tall, and that it had arms that were about, you know, 3 feet long, or like it's twice the, or, you know, like sort of like twice the size of his body, kind of thing, or not twice the size, but 2/3 the size of its body. And it had one hand or one limb, no pun intended, leaning against another tree as it was, you know, facing us or facing the circle where we had been working. And I can, that really validated that circle work and connecting with the elements and the spirits that are out there really is valid. And I just went on, you know, into my psychic career having additional validations that there is indeed something, or there is a gray zone that goes between the veil, that we can see a little into their world and they can see a little bit into ours. And that's really pretty much how it ended up, because I started talking about seeing that. I showed the people the photographs, and everything just sort of dissolved from there. So I think I might have caused it to fail, because I showed people what was actually happening in the background. And I think that they were just happy with it, just being an exercise and not having really anything come from it. But I was rewarded.
So you were rewarded with a spiritual experience and with an interesting photograph. And now I will draw the argument down a little bit more to the solo or solitary side. We've talked a lot about covens, a lot about groups. And one thing about the solitary side is that you can have some truly, truly gifted.
I think I got it. Hello? Can you guys still hear me out there? Somebody put a quick chat in the chat room. Okay. Well, I'm not hearing Darren or Daniel. Is Daniel still talking? I guess I got muted. I don't know. I can't hear anything.
Hello?
All right, everyone. If you can hear me, I'm here. This is Daniel Michael, and I was briefly disconnected. And I see it almost looks like Kevin was disconnected as well. What I'm going to do is I'm going to play a song. Kevin is typing. This is Blog Talk Radio. We do have sound issues from time to time. We've been talking about solitary versus coven. Okay, thank you, Veronica, for that information that you can hear me. Okay, it does happen from time to time, folks. There are things that are in your control, and there are things that are out of our control. And, in fact, Kevin had dropped as well. So feel free to call back Kevin. And Kevin is someone that had been in coven before, which is why we were interviewing him. And I see Minister Sanders in the chat room, and I thank you. I'm curious about the last name, but I'm not going to comment on it. And if it is who I think it is, I am honored that it's you to listen to our show with all of our technical difficulties at this point. I've certainly read some information and seen some videos, if it's the person I think it is, but I will not go beyond that. And we did mention, from the old days, I started with the Book of Shadows. I quoted something from Lady Sheba, and I've seen this book on sale in other places in the old days for, like, I'm about 43, so I'm not that old, but I've, you know, been fascinated by the occult my whole life. And I remember seeing this book on sale before for $150. It's, you know, you can buy it now for $9.95. And if you see a pagan or a witch on TV, it used to be a very unusual experience. Of course, now there's just a ton of media out there. So now what you have is, you know, it's just there. It's just another thing. I don't think it's always going to be like that. When you're inside, it can make things seem dull. But I say that it's never dull, and that magic is real, and that even though we think that things can be mundane like that sometimes, and Kevin, you might comment on this in a second, that remember that in your everyday life, in that rat race, in that terrible place, in that awful, you know, the bad boss and everything else, there are ways for you to put yourself in the state of mind to be in a magical place. So regardless of whether or not it seems like it's more information out now that's watering everything down, that doesn't affect you. That doesn't mean that it has to be you, and that you always have a part to play in this great play. And as my friend Kevin here, whose mic is on now, he does things all the time to create. He creates an oracle deck. He's created a new device. He's trying to create a electromagnetic sensor device to talk to spirits. There's always a way to innovate. There's always a way to do something, or just be quiet and go into a simple meditation. And remember that so many people just don't actually just do the work. And that is what, in my opinion, is so important. Just doing the actual thing. Just getting into the place, getting into that state of mind, getting into the trance, whatever gets you there. For some people, it's looking at certain images. For some, it's breathing techniques. For some, it's incense. For some, it's substances. But it's all valuable, and it's all part of the inner temple. You know, as our friend Chris Penzack, who's joined us before, has said, you know, his great book, The Inner Temple, which I thought was a good introductory witchcraft book. Now, Kevin, you're working on things, and there is a caller here that wants a reading from you, if you're up to it.
All right, sure.
Okay. Hold on. 619, because sometimes this is a reading show, folks, so we do take calls. Hello, you are on the air.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I saw you in the chat room, and you mentioned, this is Steve, and thank you for calling again for Main Street Universe.
Thank you. Can I get a general reading?
All right, sure.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so first I want to ask, do you have a birthday coming up?
It was last week. It was last week.
Okay. So then, yeah, I usually read to about 2 weeks ago, out to about 90 days. So was this, like, around for, like, the age of 29 or 27 or 30-something?
It was the 18th.
Oh, no, what's your age?
Oh, I'm sorry. Now I'm 58.
Oh, you're 58. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what the point that I'm making is the Saturn return. Are you familiar with that at all?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and so you're working on your second Saturn return.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that? You can go and Google that later if
I'm familiar
just
with
to
it.
Get more information. Like,
I'm familiar with it.
Okay, because what I'm being shown also, and I don't know if you know that I read with my own images, the Horizon Oracle deck, I'm looking at, the first card I'm looking at is the 333 card, and the title for that is Fly, F-L-Y.
Okay.
And if you look at the image, and you can just look at it later, just go back to Temple of Gaia, GAIA.com, or you can just Google Kevin Baird or psychic medium Kevin Baird and find Temple of Gaia that way. But it shows a person who is laying in bed, but there's like the sun that's rising up off of them, and that's really, I intended it to be as close to looking like an orb, but also have like a persona at the same time. So this talks about you having out-of-body experiences while you're sleeping, and that there are some times during the day to where you just get an epiphany because you just had a slight daydream or something that just really
yes.
brought an awakening and a realization for you, whatever, or that
yes.
these things are going to begin or start beginning and that you should follow through with the ideas or the epiphanies that happened for you. But
I had some this morning.
Go ahead.
I had some this morning.
Okay. And what happened?
Epiphanies, new information that I hadn't received before.
So you're now part of the, you know, Cox Cable or, you know, Mediacom or Verizon or whatever, like, right? You're now a cable channel.
Yeah, but I've been.
Or that you are a channel for
years.
Content, and how
yeah.
you decide to manifest the content is really up to you.
Okay.
So with this birthday that's happened for you, it's almost like you were given a permission to start being more than you've ever really considered being before.
Okay.
And to run with that. So this reading is like an overall thing, so it has to do with work, you know, life, sleeping life and awake life and that kind of stuff, and that if you're working now, you're going to feel like you have two jobs. One to where you're trying to really flesh yourself as a soul out, and the other one is just maintaining that revenue to help keep a roof over your head as well at the same time. And
okay.
that you can't feel guilty about some of the expectations people have put upon you in the past. It's
mm-hmm.
more of like they're teaching you how to be and how not to be and where to be and where not to be. Their expectations are, if they were living vicariously as you, right, instead of you just living your life, they want you to do the work for them. They want you to live their life for them so they don't have to take
mm-hmm.
the label of being a mistake maker.
Okay.
And that's what I got.
So you did have experiences this morning that he mentioned.
Well, you know, I'm not surprised because Jupiter is in my 12th transiting there, and it's making a trine to Uranus in the 8th, so it's like awakenings and images and information from dreams, meditation. So
mm-hmm.
so I think that's why I'm getting some answers to long-held questions, which started today, so.
I've been going through a similar thing myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had multiple dreams where a bat is trying to communicate with me.
you know something? That's so funny you said that, because I had one where it said today that I need to let go of some stuff so that some energy can start forming down my back or toward the end of my back for some reason.
Because
I saw my spine in the image.
And mine was a bat, I mean. Like a,
oh, a bat. Being, a bat.
The
okay,
winged
I
bat. Creature.
I thought you said B-A-C-K.
Oh. But it was, and it was very odd, and it was speaking, and it was trapped in a net.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes its voice sounded human.
Mm-hmm.
I've told people before how to fly in dreams and how to communicate with things in dreams. And not that I don't claim to be a master or a guru, folks. But I'm just saying that, you know, there are some things that I'm pretty good at. And I'm sometimes good at, in my dreams, listening to animal whispers and at flying. And it's a very incredible experience. And the bat was like, I almost could make out the words. It was screaming. It was trapped in a net, and it was screaming. But, anyway,
but that,
I think
but
it's...
The reading I just got, I'm trying to figure out how to use that information in a tangible way. I just
think
it was interesting, but
saying
I'm not
to
sure
listen to your dreams is what I think it is saying.
Okay.
Saying you're going to get some message, because I kept thinking of the haunted card, even though it didn't come up in Kevin's reading the whole time. And I remember thinking, you're going to get a message from a relative or something that's just going to feel right, and you're just going to go, oh, that's it. Because sometimes those messages aren't visual. You don't see the spirit. You don't see the ghost. You don't. Sometimes you just either see it in a dream or it just comes through in a feeling.
So are you looking for a, is this what I should be doing kind of answer?
Right.
Well, I tell people to watch for the yellow bug, yellow Volkswagen Beetle. Have you heard me talk about that before?
No.
When you see the yellow bug, it's a message to not worry about whatever it is that you're thinking about or worrying about and just to proceed.
Okay.
So I've been talking about the yellow bug probably for about 15 years, and I have friends who write for Primetime Hollywood out in California, and they've written the yellow bug message into two of their shows.
It's true.
Grimm and Once Upon a Time.
And even Selena Fox mentioned it when she was on our show. She's like, what a cute mental trick. It's like you see the yellow bug, it tells you, this is Kevin's things now, Kevin Baird. So you see it and it says, okay, well, don't worry about that anymore.
Yeah, it's
stifled. My interpretation of it was right. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah. Yellow bug is a hug bug, and it's a message to proceed with whatever it is that you are thinking about and to not worry about the outcome. You know, damn the torpedoes, just go ahead and do it.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the form of divination that is when you ask, like, okay, the color of the next car will be, you know, a yes or no answer? It almost reminds me of that kind of thing. It's a modern mental exercise.
It started when I, you know, started seeing the one lone shoes on the side of the road. There was never two shoes that were there. It was always one shoe. And how did that shoe get there? And where's the rest of the person that had that shoe, right? So I worked with my spirit guide, Stacy, and asked her, it's like, okay, what does this one lone shoe mean? And it took a couple of times seeing it before I finally got the message that it meant, okay, if you had just one shoe to walk with, you would have to be careful with every other step that you took as a part of the process situation that you're in. See, so when you see the single shoe, it means to be careful with the steps that you're taking.
Yeah.
If you see a single glove in a roadway or on a sidewalk or something, or just in the middle of an aisle somewhere out of place, then that's a message about being careful about how you handle something. See? So you can start taking your own, those things that stick out that you feel like is a sign. And my first book, Men and Angels, talked about that, about developing your own sign vocabulary, working with your own personal angel and God to help you, you know, maneuver the slings and arrows of, you know, fortune and misfortune.
Mm-hmm. Kevin?
Yeah.
In dreams, what does the foot symbolize? Because the other day I had a dream where I dreamt about my foot, and I looked at it, and it looked terrible, and it looked like it needed a new dressing. I kept saying it needs a new dressing because it looked like it was dirty and it was not healing properly, and it would just look awful, like it needed a new sole, a new dressing.
Right. Now, what can you remember what the environment or atmosphere was like when you were seeing the foot?
I think I was in a building, I think, and that's about
current era.
Yes, current.
So when you dream of being in a house or a building or something, that's talking about the life that you're living presently.
Okay.
So it's, you know, like you have different rooms in the houses, and I've designed a card in my Horizon Oracle deck called Houses, and it talks about the different rooms or whatever, yada, yada. I'm going off on a tangent, but whenever you dream about houses, it's about the life that you're living and all the people and the processes that are in your day-to-day at this present time is a house. Your job, where you work and how you interact with people, is another house. So having a body symbol show up in the building talks about something that's related to your health and maneuverability. So it can give you a sign. It can be a sign letting you know that you should be careful with the steps that are coming up, or that if you've had some kind of ailment on your foot, like a little bit of extra athlete's foot or itch or something like that, that it's just letting you know to slow down and you know, treat your feet properly, or how you keep yourself in motion to not overexert yourself. Because if you were to see a wounded foot on somebody else, you would be thinking about how that would disable their ability to do X, Y, or Z kind of situation. That's what I get from it.
Yeah, I think you also signal.
But he can listen
he is
back.
Gone, and what I'm going to do is take a brief break and come right back, Kevin, to our conversation. This is Fury Dance. All right, we are back with Main Street Universe, the network and show reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. And, of course, I'll do some show plugs. Of course, this one, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Darren was in an emergency, so he couldn't make it. But myself and Kevin Baird are discussing Solitary versus Coven. And Darren is a reader at Marie Laveau's House of Voodoo in the magical city of New Orleans. Then Monday we have Science of Light with Randy Goldberg, Vedic astrologer, Western astrologer, as well as discussing Jungian archetypes, all sorts of things, once voted as one of the top five metaphysical shows on Blog Talk Radio. Then we have Tuesdays at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Master Herbalist Susan Weed discussing herbal medicine, people's medicine, as she says, herbal medicine is people medicine, and she as well has a new book out about sexual health. It's called Down There, so check her out, susanweed.com. Then Wednesdays we have the flagship show, the one that started it all, Main Street Universe. Myself and Mr. Kevin Baird started the whole thing going, and we're going to have many more hosts coming soon. So now it's myself and associate producer Janice R. White, who's also the host of the World Reggae Party. Thursdays will be a rotating show night. Fridays is going to be Activating Compassion, no longer in the midnight hour. Jesse and Nicholas George will be doing her show when she can in the evenings, I think around 7 or so. She's got to send me the information. We'll get there. And then Saturdays will be a rotating night, and then Sundays back again to Darren Bucaire. But we will be expanding to the point where we might have like 20 hosts, all of them like once a month hosts with an expertise, not just sitting here killing time and all that kind of stuff. So I think it could make us the largest metaphysical network on Blog Talk Radio. So we're back. Mr. Kevin Baird, how you doing? Feeling good?
Yep, another day in paradise.
Okay. So you yourself, and we have about 10 minutes left, 12 minutes left, or someone who has been a long-time metaphysical practitioner, you have as well been in witches' covens. You have been Gardnerian, you've done the Sky Clad thing, you've done pretty much the whole witchy thing. You've also been an independent investigator, creator and inventor of the Horizon Oracle, and now coming soon, the Pathfinder. Of all of these experiences, from being in multiple covens, from being solitary, and from being the independent inventor, do you have any advice for those who just want to start on the metaphysical path? What you think is the best thing they could do first, either themselves or with a group?
I would say start writing about it. Keep a diary or a journal or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because really you're writing to yourself in the future, and that you're hearing from yourself in the past at the same time.
Revisit it.
Yeah.
Now,
and then just start following, you know, your notions, where you feel like you should be, what direction you feel like you should be going in.
Now, in any of the covens you had ever been in, and you don't have to say names, dates, places, times, or people, had any engaged in a substance, perhaps, that might aid and assist the operation, should I say?
Not anything illegal.
Right. Like maybe a mugwort tea or something like that.
Yep. And what it's really, it's going around in a circle, right? Drumming or playing an instrument or something, and doing that for about half an hour is a great way
to get into a trance.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I agree. And I think sound is
everything. The first time I did it, I couldn't drive afterwards, and then someone else had to.
Mm-hmm.
Quite an experience.
And in that experience, I'm curious if you had felt like there was not, let me rephrase this, because I know you've been in multiple groups and now you're more solitary. Any advice for those who want to start a group? Would you have any advice, or do you feel like you're even an authority to do that? But you've been in multiple pagan groups, so I thought maybe good advice, like, you know, get this right, get that right, make sure communication is good, etc.
I would say let it be a book club first and just start talking about the things you discover in your weekly reading.
As a member of a coven, do you think that there's an aspect of being in a coven that doesn't let you be free? Or did you feel okay with that and just felt free later?
I was okay with that.
So a little bit of surrender is okay.
Exactly.
Because that would be an interesting point to many modern pagans, is they would like to say that the idea of any kind of surrender is not free or is not freedom. But surrendering to learning can be freedom, like learning anything. I'm not even talking about learning witchcraft at this point. I'm just saying, just learning anything. If you surrender a little bit to your teacher, I don't mean being oppressed or anything. I just mean let it go and just learn, just like being in a class, being in school. It's the same form of surrender. And people, because of time, because of history, bad imagery, bad press, everything else, I think maybe always think that the coven model is something so horrible. Or in the case of the Skyclad traditions, maybe they think it's sexually abusive or something like that. Most of the time, none of it is. Yes, because human beings are involved. You're going to have bad behavior. You're going to have bad behavior in any religion. And in almost any practice where human beings are involved. But at the end of the day, both are completely valid, the coven or the solitary. If you have proclaimed yourself a witch and you have performed a ceremony before the goddess and the god, then they will see you. I promise they will see you as they have seen me. And I've used magic to heal and to do other things that I won't say on the air, but all of them positive. It can and will and does work. It relies on your belief. You have to let go. You have to let go of what you have been programmed for. You have been programmed for a system that worships a fake and very real thing. And what I mean by that is that everybody talks about things, money, taxes, all of this. All of it is based on paying off debt. I'm not trying to go into a money lecture. What I'm saying is that outside of this rat race, there is a place, or inside of it even, there is a place for magic. There will always be a place for it. The only thing holding you back is quite literally your own belief system. Because if you don't believe, then you're wasting your time. If you don't believe, then there's no reason to ever bother with it. Because it will not be successful. But if you find the way, and then if you can light the way, even beyond that, then you can help others and not just yourself. And that is how I view magic. The ability to engage in the forces of the universe in a non-harmful way for an intention or a result. It is very difficult. It is not simple. It is also incredibly simple. That's the trick. The trick is your belief. If you don't believe, it won't happen. It's very simple like that. If you do believe, it will. All the tools you see, they're all meant to do one thing, to get you to believe. The dagger, the candle, all of it. The pentacle. There's nothing wrong with that. That is a good way to go. I am just saying that it is as it is. It is as you believe. It is our gnosis that is real. The gods are as real as they are to you. And for me, as real as they are to me. So believe in yourself and remember that you're listening to Main Street Universe, the show and network reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. And I can imagine a lot, which is the whole point of this conversation. Have a great evening.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.